Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little boy named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. Thanks for supporting us for the past 100 episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly patron webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause.
The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. Today, this is Dr. Tony, and I have to say that I kind of messed up. I'm sorry, everyone. A couple of episodes ago, we had an episode with Dr. Kate Hadfield about your cervix. And we billed it as what you need to know about your cervix. And maybe I thought we would be discussing everything you need to know about your cervix, but I was wrong. And I will happily admit, maybe not so happily admit that I'm wrong. I will admit that I'm wrong. We did not discuss everything you need to know about your cervix. And I realized that as soon as we stopped recording the episode and Dr. Kate was saying, okay, well, and we also could have talked about this and this and this. And I thought, oh no. So thank you. Again, I have the immense pleasure of having my wonderful colleague, Dr. Kate Hadfield, join me again so that we can go and do an even deeper dive into more about what you need to know about your cervix. So before you listen to this episode, if you haven't listened to episode 117, or maybe even episode 36, where I first talked to Dr. Kate about pelvic health and holistic pelvic care, go back to that. And then you'll know, coming back to this episode, that Dr. Kate's a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, lactation educator, and she's super passionate about helping women connect to their creative center and their natural body rhythms. And that really includes holistic pelvic care and providing empowered PAPS and eschariotic treatment for cervical dysplasia. So last episode, we talked about, you know, what your cervix is, where your cervix is, and about pap smears. Do we need them? Do they have to be so traumatic and uncomfortable? And yes, the answer is no, they don't. And that's what, again, Dr. Kate shared with us. So let's dive into more talk about the cervix. Thank you, Dr. Kate, for joining me again.
Well, thank you for having me again. I can talk about the cervix all day, so it's all good.
Okay, so we won't have an all-day episode right now. And already I'm like, oh no, are we going to need part three of this conversation? I guess we'll see. We'll see what we cover today. So I mentioned we talked about, you know, our cervix, pap smears, and we touched a bit about, how we can really be proactive when it comes to our health with our cervix. And there are things that we can do to support our cervical health. I mean, I was fortunate enough to find this out when I had my first abnormal pap smear. I had an ascus. When I was thankfully in naturopathic medical school. So I was already under the care of a naturopathic intern. So it was almost kind of like a no-brainer where I went and I spoke to my intern and shared this result. And it wasn't about just, okay, let's just wait until the next pap smear. It was, okay, let's really support your immune system with certain nutrients. I remember doing really increasing my intake of vitamin A, vitamin C, folic acid, those kind of things. So, and that isn't necessarily what a lot of women realize when it comes to having abnormal pap smears or abnormal results from their doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like what you touched on there with the proactive part is really the key. So what commonly happens is that if you get an abnormal pap result, depending on the grade of the abnormality, what most women get told is, okay, well, this came back as abnormal, but it's low grade. So we'll just take a watch and see approach and we'll repeat the pap in about 6 months or so. And it's not that this result is wrong per se. Like if you look at what the actual research shows, the vast majority of women with an HPV infection, which is what causes the abnormal PAPs, will clear it on their own within about 2 years. So, you know, that's clear. It is quite clear. And if you choose to do nothing, you do have a fairly good chance of your body just getting rid of it in the interim. So it's not that it's a bad choice, but I think the message can also be like this: you obviously have an active infection because this is what's happening with the PAP. So why don't we take this opportunity to learn more about, are there any lifestyle decisions going on that are inhibiting your body's ability to clear this infection? And what can you do to improve these areas of your body?
And in that would be really looking at some of those really general lifestyle things that we know will impact the immune system, you know, mm-hmm. in terms
yeah,
of things
specifically
like,
with yeah. HPV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing too. And I'm sure we talked about this in the previous episode, is that if you have an abnormal PAP, you are very, very likely to have an HPV infection at the same time. And I don't know that messaging has been totally clear, because I don't think there's been enough education around like, okay, you have an abnormal PAP. Like, do you understand what that means? Right. And so
for sure.
Most women don't, right? Like they get yeah. these results delivered to them over the phone. It's unclear. They don't quite get it. And they're being presented with treatment options that they just don't understand the purpose of. So if we look at it from an infection standpoint, then it begins to make more sense. Like, well, of course your body can clear an infection. Like we do that all the time. So are there ways that we can support this?
Right. And of course, you know, it's definitely something that we've talked about multiple times on the podcast around, you know, supporting the immune system and dealing with different viruses. And yes, you know, again, the body can do that itself, but it needs certain tools and nutrients in order to really have the immune system function properly. And then this is also where I want to remind people as well, something that kind of blew my mind with the last episode was the fact that your cervix has its own immune cells.
It does. Whoa. It's immune tissue, right? Which just, again, just makes wow. sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those parts of the body that is interacting with the outside world. And if you think about the vaginal microbiome, right? Like that's going to be giving the cervix information at the same time, just like when a baby is breastfeeding and its mucous membrane, its mouth, is interacting with the areola and the nipple and communicating with the mother's body to produce antibodies and whatnot, depending on what the baby's going through. It's one of those really amazing interfaces that we see in the body. Well, like the vaginal microbiome and the cervix is very similar too. So it's so cool.
Very cool, right? Who knew? Who knew that there was all of this interplay happening mm-hmm. between ourselves and what's not ourselves in our body as well, when it
exactly.
comes to, again, that flora and the bacteria that's again naturally present in our vaginal tract. So then let's just kind of even touch on the things that can negatively impact how the immune tissue in the cervix deals with that HPV.
Right.
And you know, what can kind of interfere with how the immune system can really properly clear that infection, especially if that's, again, what's so linked directly with having abnormal PAPS and having that cervical dysplasia.
So you can think of it in terms of like, what are the things that we can add? And then what would be the things that we could take away too, right? Because it's not just about like, what are we trying to do to quote, like boost your immune system, but what are the blocks that you're stumbling over that are creating this lingering infection, right? And not allowing it to go away. So I think the research is quite clear that smoking is incredibly damaging to the body, especially when it comes to cervical dysplasia, and majorly negatively impacts the immune system. And so smoking is one of the biggest things that can prolong an HPV infection. It also depletes folate in the body. And so folate is another one of those big things that we like to recommend in cases of cervical dysplasia. And especially if someone has a history of smoking, it becomes even that much more important. So that would be one thing. No smoking.
That would be for sure
a big one there.
And then that would also kind of include secondhand smoke and thirdhand smoke kind of exposure as well, or is that to the same degree?
That's a good question. I don't know that I've seen research that supports it to secondhand smoke. I can't imagine that it would be good for your body, but maybe not quite as damaging.
Probably right.
But I don't know if the research has actually distinguished those two things. Okay. So
good to know.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's so much. And so one of the first things, of course, that like we talk about when I talk about women and what they can do to help clear the infection is, of course, like what's your diet, right? Like, what are you eating? And so we look at it in terms of like, let's try to encourage types of foods that we know the components of can actively fight HPV. So that would be things like brassicas. So our broccolis, kales, cabbages, things like that, that help with estrogen metabolism. We love our orange fruits and veggies because of the carotene contents of those. And so we're talking like carrots, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, squashes, things like that. We love those types of things in our diet. Other things we want to take away from our diet that could be inhibiting the immune system would be things like, you know, sugars, like really high dose processed sugars is what I'm talking about. Processed foods, anything that can actively stress or suppress the immune system, because you want to include things and you want to take away things that are barriers. So those would be some big things in terms of foods that people could do.
Definitely. And those are really key. And again, we'll kind of list some of those in our show notes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, I guess the next thing I think about, and I don't know if there's any research around this as well, things that can interfere with the immune system function, sleep, and even just stress overall as well.
Oh, totally. And so that would be like another category, right? So it's like what's going on stress-wise for the individual. And so that can manifest really differently. And so you can get into the like adrenaline, cortisol impact of the immune system. But if someone's just feeling run down, you know, we all know that if we're feeling more run down, we get sick more frequently. And so we just know that this is a barrier to our immune system functioning optimally. I'm also starting to screen a lot more for anxiety in women in my practice, because I'm finding that it's just really, really common. And it can manifest quite insidiously. It doesn't have to be like overt panic attacks all the time. So even just talking a little bit, you know, if someone feels stressed, just talk with them about like, well, what does that really mean for you? Like, how is that experience for you? And trying to really understand like where their nervous system is at. So it's been quite a 2 years for everyone, of course, with the pandemic. And so I think that we've gotten very accustomed to this high degree of vigilance with our nervous systems. And we don't really understand what it's like to come down from that. And so prolonged vigilance has a really negative impact on the immune system as well. So not everyone who has like a chronic HPV infection presents that way, but it is something good to discuss.
For sure. Especially in the past 2 years. I mean, being on alert, being in a state of just such increased uncertainty can really, mm-hmm. you know, ramp up that fight or flight, that sympathetic nervous system response, and really, you know, interfere with us getting into that parasympathetic kind of rest and digest, repair kind of healing mode that the body really needs to be in order to really have things function optimally.
Exactly.
And then so especially in terms of being proactive, it really is looking at supporting immune health and the mm-hmm. things that can support immune health when it comes to the cervical dysplasia, and again dealing with that HPV piece that's connected to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then it's interesting because then I think, you know, personally, my second experience with having an abnormal pap smear was actually when I had a pap smear, you know, just the timing of that recommendation around like getting a pap smear every 3 years just happened to land when I became pregnant. So I'd had a pap smear when I was pregnant and got this abnormal result. And it really kind of confused me because it was like, well, it really had me second guess whether that pap smear really made sense to get at that time, because I was wondering, okay, well, is this just because I'm pregnant? Like, because the cells of the cervix must change when it comes to different hormonal changes and fluctuations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's why doing a pap exam in pregnancy is fairly controversial. Like, you don't see that done across the board. It's not like if you look at, you know, what the recommendations are for routine prenatal care, a pap isn't included in that unless the timing just coincides. And so I would interpret that as more of a public health measure, mm-hmm. as opposed to this makes sense to do during pregnancy for these reasons. Because of course, like, your hormones are fluctuating greatly during that time, which has an impact on the cervical tissue itself, right? And so that's one thing to consider. The cervix will actually change a little bit during pregnancy. And of course, your immune system changes again during pregnancy too, right? Because we know that pregnancy is an immune suppressed state, because it has to be, otherwise your body will attack the foreigner that is within your body. We just wouldn't be here as a species. So sometimes we see these like active infections come up during pregnancy, right? Like, maybe they've been dormant, your immune system's been able to keep them at bay, but then when you become pregnant, you just don't have access to kind of your full range of your immune system. And so sometimes this is when we can see things crop up as well. And it's important to see like what exactly that abnormal pap is saying, because there are so many different ways of interpreting the cells. And I think this is another thing that people forget with pap. So it's not like a very classic diagnostic lab result, right? Like, the results of a pap, you're taking a sample of cells and you're sending them off to a human who then looks at the cells and interprets them. And so it's not that that's a bad system, but it's just not the same as like, you know, tell me what your iron level is. Like that is a fairly objective, like, this is a number and it's very black and white. Whereas, you know, interpretation of cells is very person specific. And there are guidelines, of course, but it isn't always clear. It's not a black and white. And so we have to remember that for some of these pap results, we have to take that element of kind of human, the human eye, into consideration here. And so, you know, like, what was the result? Was it, you know, ascus, which is very, very general and oftentimes doesn't mean very much, or is it a little more reliable if they're, you know, seeing like a high grade lesion or something. Right. So we have to remember that too. This isn't a black and white test. This is subject to interpretation as well.
That's a really key piece as well, that, yeah, it's not a quantitative test at all. Mm-mm. It really is more kind of qualitative and objective, depending on who's viewing it as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And like Paps can be wrong like 30% of the time, right? Like they actually have a fairly high error rate, which is unfortunate. Like I would prefer them not to have a high error rate, but they do. Like, and it's quite high.
That's so, quite yeah. high, Kate.
Like 30% is like really disappointingly high.
That is huge. That is, I think disappointing is a kind of a nice word to describe that kind of reliability. I mean, you would not, you know, put money on that.
Right. And that's why some of the recommendation can be, well, let's like wait 6 months and do it again, because, you know, maybe the infection is cleared, or maybe this wasn't the best sample, or the person viewing it interpret it. And it depends on the results too. So like once you get into the actual dysplasia categories, so those terms like SYN1, so CIN, SYN1, SYN2, SYN3, that type of thing. SYN3 is like quite easier to identify, but SYN2 can actually be quite controversial. And this is like well documented in the literature. So if you're getting a diagnosis of SYN2, it's really dicey. Like it could be SYN1, it could be a bit higher than a SYN2. It's very, very subjective. So you just need to remember that when making these clinical decisions. Another thing that a lot of labs are starting to do, not everywhere, unfortunately, is when they're doing either PAPs or on colposcopies, they're testing for the presence of HPV. And then they're actually testing for like DNA, right? Like, so they're looking for those protein capsids and other biomarkers of HPV itself. And that's really great information. And that is a black and white, right? Because they're either going to find it or not. And depending on what they find, it can also help you indicate like where you are in the infection point, right? So is it a latent infection right now, or is it like actively reproducing, depending on what they find? So that's great information to help inform clinical decisions as well.
For sure, because it would make a difference if it was just a latent infection, or if it was an early infection, or depending, if it had been there, a while and what to do about it.
Like, are we finding a little fragment of the DNA somewhere, which is like, okay, well, whatever, like we can pick up on that. That's not that big of a deal. But are we seeing signs that there is like active reproducing going on? Like that's more concerning. And then like circling back to the nutrient suggestions, when we talk about the importance of like vitamin C or carotenes or things like that, some of the research suggests that, you know, going really intensely with the dietary suggestions is only helpful in the first like 3 to 4 months of an active infection too. Some of the research suggests that. So if you're already into like, you know, 2 years into this abnormal PAP cycle, like, of course, you should improve your eating habits if you can, but that might not be enough to get out of the chronic infection phase of it. So, and when you initially get infected with HPV, you won't know because it's just so ubiquitous. And so that 3 to 4 month window is like, well, you know, most people aren't going to know that this has happened.
And how often are they really testing for those different components of the virus itself?
Right. So it would depend on the particular lab and what they're doing and what you have access to. And that's the frustrating thing too. So like you and I can order PAPs as naturopathic doctors in Alberta. We cannot order HPV testing privately here. We don't have access to it. If I had a patient whose PAP came back as abnormal and they hit certain criteria, the lab will reflexively test for HPV, but not all the time, and we can't request it. And I've had patients who have requested HPV testing from their physicians and have been told no. So it really, really depends on where you are and then the types of tests that they're using. Like, are they testing for the presence of DNA? Are they testing for protein capsids or other aspects, like other biomarkers? It varies. It's not clear.
And then if you do have those signs that it is, you know, a latent infection, it's a chronic infection, yes, you can support your immune system that way. But then it's about looking at what else can be done. And there's the what else can be done. And then there's also still the why piece too. That can be interesting as well.
Like, why is it lingering?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's not always clear either, right? I've seen kind of patterns show up clinically where, you know, someone is really struggling to clear an HPV infection and we look at their history and it's like, oh, you were getting shingles outbreaks at 20. It's like, well, that shouldn't happen. Like your immune system should be robust enough that it's keeping this virus at bay and you don't get shingles. That's typically why we see it in the elderly populations, because your immune system declines as you get older. You know, so it's like, oh, well, that's interesting, right? And so sometimes you can look to their histories and they have some type of immune system dysregulation that's gone on. And, you know, well, why is that? I don't know. I don't know that that's very clear. There's probably something genetically or epigenetically going on that just isn't clear to the rest of us at this point.
Yeah. And then if, you know, if a woman is having an issue with dealing that with that HPV infection or dealing with that cervical dysplasia, and there is no other signs of kind of immune system issues or that kind of thing, I mean, is it time to really look kind of deeper and into really the non-physical pieces of not just what's going on with the immune system, but what else could be impacting and why she's having that issue with clearing it? And what does that mean?
Yeah. And so I think that like, this is where we really shine as naturopathic doctors, because we should absolutely look at the immune and we should look at the other barriers to health. So like insulin resistance, mitochondrial support, nutrient deficiencies, liver function. Like, of course, we should look at all of those things too, because those are all really important. So let's assume we've looked at all of that. Totally fine.
Check.
You know, you're just super. So then we always look at like, okay, well, what's the mental emotional piece that's going on here too? And so what I find comes up a lot when it comes to these like chronic infections is issues around shame and boundaries. And that can look very different for each individual, but from that more like holistic pelvic care perspective, a lot of us carry shame in our pelvic bowls. And especially when we start talking about things that are considered sexually transmitted, then you get into the person's beliefs around sex and, you know, you caught something from someone you slept with and like, what does that mean to you? And is that dirty or like, have you done something wrong there? And there can be a lot of shame around this type of infection. And again, I think part of it goes back to the messaging around HPV and that like, oh, it's associated with like a high number of sexual partners. That's something we always got taught. And I can't remember if I mentioned this in the last podcast or not, but like I've asked that question before because the research defines everything and the research defines a high number of sexual partners as like 3 and above. And so for some people that would be high and for others it would not be. And, but the messaging is very shame-based because it's like, well, if you're sleeping around, this is what's going to happen, as opposed to this virus is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. You're going to meet it.
Like, yeah. Cause
you're just going to meet it.
If having like 3 or more sexual partners is sleeping around, like, you know, geez, that's a really wild definition.
And it's purely subjective, right? Like, so for some people that totally would be high and that's fine. And that's why it's not a good thing, it's not a useful thing to focus on, because it really is like, no, this virus is everywhere. You're going to meet this at some point during your adult life. So that's not the focus. The focus is not on avoiding it. The focus is on how do we arm ourselves best to fight this infection when it happens. So.
And really holding on to a feeling of shame or being dirty or feeling bad, not being good or doing what is you're been told to or expected to or anything. I mean, that can create a certain amount of like, inner stress, inner turmoil.
Of course.
That can absolutely manifest physically and especially if we're talking about things that can suppress the immune system.
Well, exactly. Like we know how much stress and even our thoughts and feelings can influence the immune system directly. So we can even talk about it from a very physiologically based perspective, or we can also just acknowledge that this is an area of the body that we have been actively shamed for a very long time, and where we also carry a lot of our shame. And so one of my favorite things to bring up with this is that one of the main nerves that innervates the perineum and a large portion of the pelvic bowl is the pudendal nerve, right? And the actual Latin origin of that word pudendum means shame.
Awesome. So,
like, our main nerve.
Great.
Still wonderful. Shame. Like, come on.
Yeah. So yeah. Is there any wonder that we're feeling this shame when that label has literally been placed on our body?
Exactly.
In a not sneaky way with Latin.
Well, exactly. Right. So frustrating. And then again, like the lack of education around, like, why are you getting a pap exam? Like, what does that, like, do you really understand what that means? If you get an abnormal result, do you really understand what that abnormal result means? And most people don't. So they don't understand why they're getting it done. They're confused by the result, and they're being told, well, don't worry about it. We'll just do it again in 6 months, which is really patronizing. You know, it's very much like, there, dear, don't worry your pretty little head about it. It doesn't concern you. And so it creates more shame because you're not educating and empowering and allowing women to make their own decisions, whether or not you agree with those decisions or not.
Yeah, it is still very much a vestige of this, you know, again, patronizing kind of view of doctor versus patient. And that, yeah, you don't need to know, or we're not going to bother, you know, explaining, just, you know, trust me. Trust me, I'm the doctor.
Well, it's like that Monty Python skit in the delivery room. Everyone needs to go YouTube that, because the mother is lying there and all the doctors are bringing in everything and the machine that goes ping. And she's like, what do I do? And they say, nothing. You're not qualified, dear. And, you know, of course, tongue in cheek, but there can be a lot of that. And so if we're trying to get at shame, you know, not educating and just telling people there's nothing to worry about is just keeping things in the dark still. And I think we can all look to Brené Brown's work about shame, and the antidote to that is being witnessed and being seen and bringing things out into the light.
Yes. Love that. Love that. And, you know, I've never thought of Brené Brown's work necessarily specifically when it comes to, you know, abnormal pap smears or, you know, HPV before, but absolutely that, you know, definitely makes a difference. And I think, again, having these conversations around, you know, so that women actually know what's happening with their body, so that it isn't, you know, clouded over with this, you know, kind of default of shame is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing I often see come up is this notion of boundaries in the pelvic bowl. And so, and you can really take an immune system approach to this, right? Because fundamentally, what's your immune system supposed to do? It's supposed to recognize self from other and attack the other, right? And so what's going on with these is that it's not able to effectively fight off the other, meaning HPV. And so just having that conversation around boundaries, like, do you allow people to make decisions on your behalf? Are you not fully standing in your own power, in your own desires, what you want? Were your boundaries violated? Right. So, you know, was there assault of some kind? Was there sexual abuse? Was there medical trauma that you didn't feel like you had the ability to say no to? Things like that. Are you taking on too much and doing for others? Like, this notion of boundaries in the pelvic bowl can be very big. And if there have been boundary violations, that's a really big one, because that really disrupts the connection to someone's pelvic bowl, and they don't really feel like it's theirs, or they just don't want to be present in it because there's so much discomfort with being there because there's been so many violations. So boundaries can be a really big one, and applying that to sex. So, like, sexual boundaries, that can be a really big one.
Absolutely. Not only, like, in the past, not feeling safe to say no or not having your no heard, but then that even that present of can you still, you know, be able to stand in what you really want and what you need. Are you able to say no when you don't want something or don't need something? Can you say yes when you want something or need something?
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about being able to say no, because it's such a difficult thing, especially for women to be able to say, but we also need to talk about like when to say yes. Saying yes feels really good too, but you have to understand that healthy yes. So it's another part of the boundary conversation as well. So if I had to pick like two kind of big mental, emotional pieces to talk about with respect to the pelvic bowl and the cervix, especially cervical dysplasia, it would be that shame and boundary work.
Absolutely. That's key. Now, and then it's interesting that, you know, as we age, we have these hormone fluctuations going into perimenopause and menopause. And then typically our immune system isn't quite as robust or as zippy, as Dr. Paul Anderson said, as when we're younger.
That's good, yeah.
So we have a less zippy immune system to deal with HPV and that kind of thing. It's interesting that that kind of coincides with maybe an ability to really step into our power as we age, more so than when we are younger.
Yeah, that's really interesting too, because what I notice with a lot of like my menopausal patients is that like once they've really hit menopause, their GAF, like their GAF factor just goes way down. Mm. They just don't care anymore. No. And it's like, they're not as permeable to the outside world. And they're just like, I'm doing this. I no longer care. See you later. And they've just had it. Right. Which I think is really, really brilliant. And so it's interesting to kind of link that back, right, with hormones in the immune system and all of this too. And from a dysplasia perspective, like, typically by that point in the game, you have eliminated HPV from your system. Like it doesn't tend to last that long, and reinfections would be pretty uncommon at that age too. So we don't see as many older women with like chronic HPV infections. I'm sure it happens, but it's just not typical. So
what, what really is the typical age range where you're seeing, where we see most women really having issues with HPV and cervical dysplasia? Is it more kind of in the middle kind of?
Yeah, I would say it's the middle ground. So it's assumed that if you're under 30, you have HPV. That's just the assumption. And so you may or may not get abnormal paps from that. That just depends. So that could happen. But I think most of the patients that are going through the colposcopy clinics and whatnot are in that like 30 to early 40s, maybe mid 40s range. Because after 30, you should have already fought it off. They don't expect to see HPV in your system anymore. You're also that much more concerned about fertility typically. And so if you're getting consistent abnormal paps and there's talk of LEAP procedures being done, you're just that much more concerned about the impacts, I think, on pregnancy and fertility and all of that type of thing. So it tends to be focused in that age range.
Yeah. Great. Now, and then when it comes to, again, the immune system not working ideally, or again, dealing with these mental, emotional pieces, do you find that your work in doing really kind of the localized topical treatments can also help to shift that mental emotional piece? How do you, I don't know, maybe if you can talk a little bit about how you look at addressing that and both of those things.
So I think a lot of it just comes down to meeting the patient where they're at, right? Like I've had some clients where like they're just coming in for the treatment. Like that's it. That's all they're interested in. And that's totally fine, right? Like that's something we can provide. And that's what we're going to do with them. And then others who maybe are a little more open to the mental emotional approach, or who are already on that journey themselves, they come in wanting to understand a bit more of like, why is this lingering? And, you know, maybe they're having a lot of anxiety around it. And so then we just like talk about that more, but it's always about kind of feeling like, well, where are they at? with all of this? Like what could benefit them? What are they interested in? And then going from there.
Mm-hmm. Are there any maybe kind of beginning things to think about or tips when it comes to like doing that boundary work and things that could be a first step to not only kind of assess your boundaries, but also start to strengthen those boundaries? Mm.
Yeah. So I think even just trying to cultivate that connection with your pelvic bowl. So like physically, so doing some, you know, mindfulness-based activities or journaling or meditation, just about like, how do you relate to this region of your body? What does it feel like for you? Are you very like antagonistic with it? You know, some women have had a really challenging history with like heavy periods or pain or things like that, which is totally understandable. But you know, how they think about this area or their language they use is very interesting because it can be very combative and negative. So just starting off by being mindful about like, what is that initial relationship like with this area of your body? And then in terms of boundaries, like how do you deal with saying no? Like, is that something you're comfortable with? Is it not? What about saying yes? What about taking things on? You know, how do you relate to responsibility or overfunctioning or underfunctioning, things like that? I think those things are really important to look at and then put it in the lens of what's going on physically.
Mm. Oh, I think those are such key pieces, Kate. Mm-hmm. Those are really great. Now, anything else that you feel like we need to know about the cervix? I know, again, you could talk for hours and hours.
goodness. Anything else that I would love women to know? Well, I wish everyone would see it, would be able to like actually, you know, figure out how to view one's cervix. And so just to see it, because it's such a cool part of the body and it does such amazing things. So I think that would be great. I would wish for everyone to see it. But I think the big take home is that you can do things that are proactive for your cervical health. And I'm sure I said this last time too. So while the research does support that whole like watch and see approach when it comes to dysplasia, at the same time, why are we not encouraging you to be proactive? Because the research equally supports lots of changes and nourishing things that can be done to support our cervix. So I think approaching cervical health differently by this really proactive, involved, take charge approach would be amazing.
I think that's so key. And yeah, I don't think that we can overstate that. I think, you know, that that idea that you can really take charge of your health and you can do things that really positively impact how your body functions and how it's able to, again, you know, function and have that immune system clear those infections and support the cells of your cervix as much as possible. Those are all within our grasp. And I think it's so fantastic that there is more research being done on that. Again, the nutritional piece, and really more of that more natural approach when it comes to really addressing cervical dysplasia. It's nice to have a number of different options to choose, and that really will depend on each woman out there of what makes sense to them and what feels right for them as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome. So again, you can go back, listen to episode 117 if you want to hear a little bit more about some more of those natural approaches as well. And then how can people get in touch with you, Kate? How can people connect with you?
So I'm on Instagram, and so my handle is @yourpelvicnd. So I'm there quite frequently these days. I'm currently practicing at Vive Health in Calgary. And so they can also hop onto my website at yourpelvicnd.com. And so all the stuff is online there.
Perfect. And we will link to your website and your Instagram handle on the show notes. So people, you can go look at the show notes, connect with Kate and see all the fun, interesting info that she's sharing there. Let's switch gears now and let's share our super mom moments and our mama mess ups. I'll go first. Mine actually is a little bit of a combo. Mama mess up, maybe kind of turn into a super mom moment that just happened yesterday. While I was in the shower yesterday morning, I agreed while I was in the shower, maybe not rudely interrupted, but interrupted and agreed to Frankie and our daddy's plan to go swimming, you know, within a couple of hours. And I said yes, but I was super annoyed because it totally changed my plans. You know, here I was washing my hair. I planned to go to a colleague's party that she was having after the birth of her second little one. And so I said yes. And then after a while, I was really annoyed and kind of grumpy. And then I said I wouldn't go. I was just waffling back and forth. So a little bit of a mama mess up in terms of like not being super decisive and also like saying yes and then saying no to my daughter, which like really got me. But finally I just like blow dried my hair. I got my swimsuit on and I was just like, okay, yes, I've just decided I chose to go and to have a good experience and have fun there. So while also enforcing my boundaries, because I said to myself, I was not going to wet my hair. It's not going to get my hair wet since I had just washed it and dried it. So I let Frankie and her daddy go in the cold pool while I stuck to the hot tub and the warm kiddie pool. Mm. So a little bit of a mama mess up, kind of being a little bit waffly and indecisive, that turned into a super mom moment because it was really fun and timing was great. We had a great time and then left, and then we went to the party, which was also a great time there. So all around, you know, super mom moment, although there was a little bit of mess up in there. How about you, Kate? Now, I know you have an amazing super mom moment.
not the one you think.
I'm trying to force you to have a specific super mom moment.
No, it's totally fine. No, so what Tony's referring to is a little mini triathlon that I did yesterday. Yay. which was pretty super. But no, the one I was thinking of, so my super mom moment is so my eldest has never been terribly interested in reading. It's just he's got much other thing, you know, many other things to do in his life. And I came across this great book that was just talking about like different ways to get kids interested in reading. Not that I was concerned over it. And it said, just, you know, do whatever they're interested in. And like even try like animated books, like comic books and, you know, graphic novels. That's what I'm looking for, graphic novels. And so I found this series called The Investigators. And it's these alligators who are like detectives and they, you know, fight crime and are interested in things. And he is just obsessed with these all of a sudden. He's not reading it because he can't read yet, but he cannot put these books down and is just fascinated by them. So even just getting him into the practice of like taking books and opening them, I think is good groundwork for the future. So I was really proud that I just, you know, went with it. And though it wasn't looking like books I had read growing up, it doesn't matter. It's still all good.
Yay, Mama Kate. Good work. Mm. Nice job. Any mama mess up that you want to share?
Well, of course. Today? Yeah. So in the same tone, I have definitely not been bringing my highest self to bedtimes as of lately. My eldest is not a big fan of falling asleep, and it's just hard at times. You know, it can be really frustrating. And, you know, when you've gone back in the room like four times and you're tired and it's like, dude, like you need to go to sleep for all of our sakes here. Like it is time. So yeah, we just go through these waves of like, it's easy for a couple of weeks and then it's difficult for a couple of weeks. So that's been hard. It's been hard to stay calm.
Yeah. So. And then it's hard to like give yourself some grace and gentleness yeah. too, because you're going through it. You're in it, right?
Yeah. 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 And there's just no easy path. So it's just hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you just got to keep at it, because that's just life, right? And that's what we got to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Kate, do you have a mama must have to share with us today?
Yeah. So it is April when we're recording this, and it's finally getting warmer, and we really love biking as a family. And so last year we managed to get our hands on a Wehoo. And so it's this trailer you hook up behind your bike, and it can either be a one or a two seater. And so the kids sit not like a chariot where they sit side by side, but the Wehoo is where they sit in front and behind each other, and they can pedal, and there's like a little flag at the back. And that thing was absolutely brilliant last year for us. We went on so many adventures, like around the water and out in the country. And I swear that we got more, like, I've never had a car that has gotten so many looks as this Wehoo does when we go out with it as a family. But it was just wonderful because it gave us that sense of freedom and mobility and exploration. And it was awesome. So if that works for someone's family and where they live, I highly recommend getting a Wehoo. So,
oh, that sounds amazing. I'm definitely going to check that out. My mama must have today is actually looking at, you know, I'm not a big fan of really taking in a whole lot of news, especially when we talk about managing kind of stress and anxiety. I think it's very important to have boundaries around that. But I also think it's really important to have a really good source of news that you can trust when it comes to what's going on around the world. And so I'm definitely a big fan of a show that's kind of outside of the corporate mainstream news media, Breaking Points with Crystal Ball and Saigar and Jetty. They really provide a really politically balanced view of what's going on in the world events, and really with a questioning nature and analysis of what's going on and even what's presented in mainstream news. So I think it's really a great place for me to kind of get some information and get, you know, an idea of the different kind of spin and perspective on things that are going on in the world, to keep that, you know, perspective, so that it's not like, you know, fear-based and you know, anxiety ramping up. So that's my mama must-have for today. And thanks. Lovely. Thank you so much again for joining us today, Kate, and again, sharing all of your wonderful cervix wisdom with us. And thanks to everyone else for joining us today. Again, you can check out our show notes on perimenopausalmamas.com. You can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And you can also support us by visiting our Patreon page. And you can also please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. That really helps to get the word out and allow for other women to around the world to find more about us as well. So stay safe and healthy, everyone. Take care.